Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Hi, this is Amy Valdez-Barker, and I am delighted to be here with my colleagues Jennifer Watley-Maxell and Beth Daniel. We are talking about women in ministry and both the joys and the challenges of that as we jump into looking at particular ways in which women have been challenged in ministry, but also as we live out our ministry. One of the books that we were looking at was On Our Best Behavior by Elise Lonan. The subtitle is The Seven Deadly Sins and the Price Women Pay to Be Good. So it's an interesting book, but an interesting way to begin to look at how is it that we have been enculturated into understanding ourselves as women, particularly women as we engage in the world. Here's a quote that I pulled from the book that I found really interesting as I dug into what does it mean to understand these seven deadly sins as a woman. And this particular one was looking at envy. Chapter 3, envy, believing envy to be sinful. We deny our own wanting. She writes, "Women struggle to acknowledge what they want," she offered, "in part because we've been conditioned to believe we don't actually have wants." Pow. Then she goes on to saying, "I thought about this feeling of wanting opportunities and experiences for ourselves just because we want them, and how deeply we bury it in our subconscious. I thought about how shameful it is for women to express desire in all parts of our lives, and how many of us would rather clip the bud of our ambition than experience the humiliation of being exposed for thinking we're worthy of adding something meaningful to the world." That really struck me as I thought about my own experiences and sort of putting my own wants and desires on the back burner because I thought it would be wrong to want something that either somebody else had, the neighbors had, or my colleagues had. And that's always been something that I've struggled with. I'd love to hear from Jen or Beth, how did that quote strike you when you thought about it?
Yeah, when I read this quote, I had a very similar reaction. What I love about this book is kind of tying these things to this idea of the seven deadly sins, right? And the ways that we as women are taught that goodness and being good is the thing, all caps, that we're supposed to strive for. And therefore, everything that does not culturally lead to goodness is somehow wrong or shameful or something that we cannot traffic in. What I think is really powerful, though, about this when we talk about ourselves as women leaders is that it really does, for me, call into question the ways that our inability to acknowledge our desires, acknowledge the things we want, the things that we admire in others and in ourselves, clips our ability to be effective leaders. That part of what we do as leaders is to establish norms, to set vision, to be able to cast vision, and to be able to communicate to those who we are in community with what our group dynamics are, what our priorities are. And if we can't even admit to ourselves what we want, then as leaders, we're going to falter in that area. And I think that's crucial because when we look at the criticisms that women often get in leadership and women pastors, it is this kind of like we're indecisive or we don't know what we want or we waffle. And so I think it's just really interesting that she points that out, particularly when it comes to this chapter where she talks about envy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is such a provocative book, which is the reason we're using it. And I confess my discomfort with all the terminology. And I confess that because I'm guessing there'll be people listening who will not want to claim envy as a good thing. But the interesting thing about what this author does is take the way that men approach ministry and leadership and recognizes that even if we do the same, it's redefined as something bad. So it's not that I want anyone to think we're sitting on here going, hey, envy is good. Coveting is good. Wanting what your neighbor has is good. But desires, or wanting to follow in someone's footsteps, believing you are called to something great, recognizing greatness in others and say, hey, I want a piece of that. I feel I'm supposed to do that or be that. We are conditioned to think that is envious and bad. And I think what she's redefining and helping us as women to recognize is it's okay to have ambition and desire and a calling that is bigger than we ever imagined. Not because we deserve it, but because we've been called to it, because we have things to say, we have things to contribute. And that's a good thing. Desire has been framed as envy. But what if it is a God-given desire of your heart?
Yeah. And I think one of the quotes that she pulls from is Brené Brown. And she writes, she explains in her book, Atlas of the Heart, that envy is typically armed with hostility and deprecation. And so I think that's what she was really trying to get at, is that in this quote, she says, I want that and I don't want you to have it. I also want you to be pulled down and put down. And too often, I think we as women get caught up in that rat race, right? Like, I want that and I don't want you to have it, right? Like we keep thinking, oh, only a few people can have that. And therefore, that's why we want that. But yet, here we are living and breathing and following an abundant God. And so what does it mean to believe in an abundant God who gives abundantly, who equips us abundantly, and not in a way that sort of says, oh, only this group gets that or only that group gets that? And I think that's challenging.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And what I think is so interesting, you know, very early in the book, she states something to the effect of, we are raised toward goodness and men are raised toward power. And particularly when it comes to envy, ambition, all of these words, it is seen not just as something that is not good. It is often seen as a desirable trait in men, because men are awarded for emulating powerful men. Men are awarded for being ambitious. Men are rewarded for going after what they want with gusto and with zeal. And so it's not just a matter of us feeling a certain way. It is the way the world treats us. It is the expectation that we are constantly having to push back against. And it's a legitimate thing. I think sometimes when we get into these conversations, it's kind of like, oh, well, as women, we feel this way. But it's more than feeling. This is the reality that many of us have to fight every day with the people that we are called to serve and be in community with.
And when we're so conditioned to push down those desires or those feelings of call or that sense of giftedness under the guise of you being envious, this desire is bad. Stop trying to put yourself ahead of others. We really are denying, or could be denying, a call from God. So we're not even discerning faithfully when our initial instinct is to immediately feel that we need to shut that down. And it's not just a lack of self-confidence. As you said, Jennifer, this is the way that we have been conditioned. We are helpers. We are not leaders. That is a really difficult condition to pull ourselves out of. And even the most confident, called, gifted among us struggle with that. And I think this is just a really good thing to talk about. Yeah. You know, I was thinking this word envy, I've thought about it a lot since we decided we were going to discuss this quote. And I remember Barbara Brown Taylor talking about holy envy. She started kind of redefining, based on others' work, redefining that envy can also be an awareness of goodness elsewhere. And it's okay to pursue that and to explore that, to be curious about it, and to go after it if you feel so led. So it really is this redefining, but recognition of what we're all carrying within us to some extent.
Yeah, and I think it helps us also begin to recognize this overwhelming shame that often comes with envy, and being able to say, you know what, that shouldn't be shameful to sort of want or envy or admire something that someone else is finding their success in or doing well. It should be that sort of gift of, wow, celebration. Like, oh my goodness, look what Beth is doing. This is amazing. Oh my goodness. look how successful Jennifer is in this particular area. You know, not envious, but celebration rather than that, oh man, I feel like I wish I wanted what she had, but yet that's so wrong of me. You know, how do we get past that? How do we begin to retrain ourselves or train our children and our grandchildren to not feel that way, this overwhelming shame when they see something good that someone else has?
I think part of it has to do with, again, what we are after. This idea of being seen as good and this idea that we always have to be kind of leaning into the good thing. When my kids were little, there's a 6-year difference between my oldest and my youngest. And my oldest daughter, I always said, you know, I wanted her to be outspoken and speak truth to power and be able to intercede from herself. And by the time she got to 5 or 6 and I had to answer all these questions that I didn't have answers for and the whys, and she was talking my ear off. By the time the second two came, I was like, I just want them to be nice. They don't ever have to talk. They don't ever have to reason. Just be nice. And I think in some ways we have so been steeped in that, that we are constantly in this work of proving ourselves and apologizing. One of the things that absolutely drives me crazy about women in leadership is how many times we will be in our position at work, in the church, wherever we are, and we can't have a conversation without saying, I'm sorry, at least 32 times. I'm sorry, but, I'm sorry, but, instead of just saying, no, I'm not sorry, this is reality. Our numbers are what they are. The situation is what it is. But us constantly doing this work internally in our heads of the thing that we have to do, the shame that comes with it, unshaming it so then we can speak it, but then having to apologize because we don't want anybody else to be offended. And again, I think some of it goes to the reality is that when we look at the life of Jesus, Jesus was very controversial. Jesus was very direct in a lot of ways, and Jesus was very much a part of the culture where he was, and he was definitely embodying a different way of being and preaching and teaching a different way of seeing the world, and never did he apologize for that. Jesus never apologized for who he was. And Jesus didn't ask other people to apologize for who they are. Jesus wasn't in the shaming business. He was in the business of making people whole. He was in the business of healing people. And he was in the business of making people confident in who he was as Jesus the Christ so that they could go out and make disciples. And I think that's the thing that we forget, that our way of being in the world is to attract light so that others can follow Jesus. We are supposed to attract the ears and the attention of the world, quote unquote, as it said, because that's how we attract other people to Jesus Christ. And I think sometimes that gets lost.
Jesus was also in the business, Jennifer, and I love the use of that phrase. He was also in the business of encouraging life together. And in answer to Amy's question of, so how do we get past all of these hurdles, even if we really believe this stuff that we're talking about, like how do we actually put that into action? I think women need each other. And I think it's time to do away with that mindset of an economy of scarcity, that if she gets it, then there's not enough for me, because that pits us against each other. Women have done that for too long because of that mindset, because of how we've been conditioned that only a few of us can get ahead and we should pretend we don't want to. But we need each other. And I know from even working with you ladies and for preparing for this podcast, we are very different women. We do not have to agree on every issue. We have very different backgrounds, theologically, spiritually, ethnically, culturally. It doesn't matter. When we come together, I feel encouraged and empowered. And I hope that we can continue to encourage other women to do that for one another. Men tend to find mentors, professional mentors, much easier than women do. There are men coming alongside because in some way it reflects on the one passing down this knowledge and wisdom and power. But unless we can get out of this scarcity mindset, for women, we need to start building each other up and seeing each other in the same way. And I think that's how we get out of it, by having these open conversations about how we really feel rather than how we've been conditioned to feel.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point, Beth. And women feel like even if you were sort of climbing the corporate ladder or whatever it was, you always think that there's only just a few slots for women in those spaces because there are so few women there. And yet, what does that mean? And then, of course, men in those positions are like, wait, I'm not going to dislodge my position. What are you talking about? You know, I'm pretty happy right here. Why would I want anyone else to get that opportunity? And it isn't until we as women sort of make space, and men also make space, for women to come forward. I had this wonderful opportunity to visit Fiji and work with the Methodist Church in Fiji. And what struck me was that there were so few women in leadership there in particular. And I had the opportunity to preach to the full seminary. And one of the things that I said to the community was, specifically to the men, I said, you know, if it wasn't for those of you who are in these leadership positions to open up space, then women will never have that opportunity to get there. So I think the envy piece is also for men to think about. You know, it's not envy in the scarcity model, but it's opportunity in saying, hey, we do serve an abundant God, and all need to be at the table with us. All need to be engaging in the good gifts and glory and diversity that God offers through all of us.
I just wanted to say that, you know, recently I was at a women's conference and it was so edifying and healing and all those wonderful things. And the thing that was different was it wasn't a networking or like a professional gathering. It was a gathering where sisterhood was the ethos that permeated all the sessions and everything. And when I came out, one of the things that I often say that I said about that gathering was that sisterhood heals. And I think that when we talk about community and we talk about women coming alongside, it's important for us to really be intentional about the type of gathering that we are providing, that it's a sisterhood where we lift one another, where we see one another, we embrace one another, and we provide space for the women there to get what they need, which isn't the same for all of us, but get what they need and be supported as they go forth.
Amen to that.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations
committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.